most of the people I see in the market, like, I don't think they understand the customer. Like, that's why most businesses fail. Like, a lot of coffee companies are started by, and I say this like respectfully and with love, like coffee nerds. And they're always trying to, like, if you go to like your local like coffee shop, like the messaging is always like, we're best friends with the farmers and this is the best cup of coffee you'll ever have. That's like basically what everyone says. The thing is like, not everyone lives like in San Francisco and New York. Like, people don't always care about that messaging.
What's up, everybody? Armand here, back with another episode. Today's guest, we have Zach France. Zach's the founder of Wildland Coffee. It's a company that serves coffee in a tea bag to make things more convenient for the outdoors. We talk about finding your target audience in this episode and how having empathy will help you with that. We also talk about overlanding, which is a type of camping I never heard of, and we go on a little tangent on how TikTok has taken over the world. That being said, follow me on TikTok. This podcast is now on. Thank you very much for listening, and I hope you enjoy this episode of the Play Hard Podcast.
Work hard, play hard. Work hard, play hard. Work hard, play hard. Work hard, play hard.
Without further ado, Zach, how's it going today?
Good, man. How are you doing?
I'm doing really well. For the listeners out there, this is Zach France, the founder of Wildland Coffee. The cool thing about Wildland Coffee is they're making coffee in a tea bag. They do that for your instant coffee outdoor convenience. How'd you get the idea for that, Zach? That's really interesting. I remember reading that and I was like, damn, that's really captivating.
Yeah, so I was living in Salt Lake at the time and doing quite a bit of camping and, you know, outdoor adventures. And I was just getting really sick of using my French press when I was camping. And it seemed like a really dumb problem to have. Like, it seemed like there should be like a decent solution, like outside of instant coffee.
Yeah.
And so I just started thinking, like, how can I solve the problem? And I had never seen anything when I thought of it. So it just made sense, like coffee in a tea bag. Like, it's just like, it was just so obvious. And I was really surprised. I had never seen it, anything like that. So in that moment, I was like, damn, like, I'm a fucking genius. Like, I'm like Steve Jobs.
Innovator.
I went home and I Googled it. And it turns out, like, I wasn't the only one that thought this. So I ordered the other products. Turns out I wasn't that smart. I ordered the other products, and there were like two things that I felt like I didn't love about the other products. Was one, like, I thought the coffee was like okay, like it wasn't bad, it wasn't good, it was fine. And then almost like more importantly, I didn't love the branding. Like, I felt like this product right now is just like so perfect for the outdoor use case, because if you think about consumer habits, coffee is like very ritualistic, and getting people to move off their morning coffee routine is very difficult. So there's like an inertia challenge, but then there's also a price challenge. So like, this type of product, just because of how it's made and some other factors, like, it is a premiumly priced product. Yeah. When you're making coffee at home, like, the most someone will ever spend is like a high-end espresso for $1. And that's like a pretty like small market even.
Yeah.
And so for this type of product to, you know, be a profitable, like, healthy business, like, right now, like, you can't really charge $1, you know, to like the consumer.
Yeah.
And so, you know, being that I kind of thought of this in the outdoor context, then I started to think, well, when you're outdoors, there's less friction to switch, because people use French presses, they use pour overs, they use instant coffee, but the vast majority of people, like, aren't super pumped about those options. Like, they use them, but when you talk to people, they're like, yeah, I use a French press. Like, they're not like, yeah, I love my French press. And so getting someone to switch is like much easier. And when you're like camping, like, or, you know, you're backpacking or, you know, whatever, like, $2 for like a pouch is like, or even like a little bit more, like,
also, to your point on rituals, typically when you're in the outdoors, especially camping, backpacking, you're going to be someone that moves around a lot, and it's going to be a lot easier to kind of switch up and change your rituals and kind of try new things, especially from a convenience perspective, rather than like you said, you were using your French press every day and it was a bit tougher.
Yeah. Well, and so there is the aspect of like changing the ritual, but like on almost like the exact opposite side, it's almost like people can take their at home ritual and bring it outdoors with them.
Because I see
when coffee is at home, it's like fairly convenient, right?
Yeah.
And then outdoors is no longer convenient. And so you can kind of like, in a way, it is both. Like you can get someone to switch, and at the same time, you're all, in a way, you're bringing that like at home ritual outdoors with you.
And one thing I really like that you did is you found the right niche for this. You were like, okay, the branding isn't fully there because this is perfect for the outdoors. When did you notice, that was something that you noticed based on your own problems, but when did you notice a click from the market perspective that yes, the outdoors really is the correct target? And I guess this was your genius moment of switching the tea.
Well, I'm a big believer. Like I've started other businesses. This is actually my second coffee
yeah.
business.
I was going to ask about that one.
Yeah. So like, I know there's like a lot of different ways to come up with business ideas. And for me, I figured like if I have a problem and if I've never seen a solution that I liked, there's probably at least 1 million people in the United States that have that same problem. And if I can get 1 million customers, like I'll be yeah, pretty
sweet,
I'll be pretty happy. So
at $1 each, not bad.
Yeah. Or, you know, $2 each, right?
Yeah. Or 10.
Yeah. Yeah. So yeah, like I don't know. I just, I was like pretty, it just made so much sense.
Yeah.
Like it just clicked. So I'll actually go into, the first business. So, the first coffee business was like basically the same product. So the story that I told you happened in like 2018. I started my first coffee business in October of 2019 with a business partner. It was my mom's best friend's son. So I had a cousin you see at like Thanksgiving and Christmas.
Yeah.
And he's like a branding kind of marketing guy. And so I figured, you know what, like he has skills that I don't, like let's team up. Well, it didn't go very well. And so I ended up leaving that company in November of 2021. And then I started Wildland in March. No, I'm sorry. Started it in October of 2019, left in November of 2021 or 2020. I started Wildland in March of 2021.
Got it. Okay. So you had a full year's experience of already founding a coffee company before this.
Yeah. And one of like the big things was like, I always wanted the product to be for like campers and like very like outdoorsy people.
Yeah.
But like, and this is part of like kind of why that relationship fell apart. Like the product ended up like the branding and the person ended up like not really being that person for me.
Yeah.
And so, so then when I started Wildland, it was really about like executing on what that original vision was. But to answer your question, I mean, there was a little bit of this with the first business, but again, because of like the focus and because of like COVID and like some other reasons, I didn't
really
get out and like talk to a lot of people like in person. But with Wildland, you know, like when I go to events, like I was at an expo this past weekend. I just got back last night. Like everyone who comes up to the booth, they're like, oh, this is so obvious. Like, this is so obvious. This is so obvious. And they say like, oh, I hate my French press, but it's such a pain to clean it. Like, it's like what literally everyone says. Like, so it's just like abundantly clear from all the people that I talk to that like this is a huge problem for people who are outdoors. And like, that's like actually like one of my biggest fears is like, I know this is a problem for people and I don't want to fuck it up. Like it's there. Like everyone I talk to, I should say everyone. Like,
yeah.
Majority.
No, yeah.
But there's some people who like love their AeroPress, their French press, like whatever. Fine.
You can have
the majority of the people I talk to have this problem. So it's like, just don't fuck it up.
Do you feel like that adds a bit of pressure to you? And How does that affect you creating the product and like kind of marketing it's promoting it out there?
Well, I mean, I think like pressure is good. Like, yeah. I think to a degree, like anxiety and pressure are good things. You don't obviously want it to be like crippling.
Yeah. But it drives you forward for sure.
Yeah. Like I'm like pretty fortunate. Like my wife and I, we like own our home outright. Like, so it's not like if it's not successful, I'm going to like lose my home.
Yeah.
My wife is like really supportive and, you know, she like pays my bills and shit now. But yeah, I mean, like the pressure to succeed is more of like, it's like that kind of pressure. Like I know there's something here, and more companies are catching on to like the teabag format in general. And so it's like, which company is going to be the most successful one? And I think Wildland is positioned very, very nicely to like be that company.
How do you deal with that competition of more coffee? Like coffee's a space I imagine that the big players have a lot of resources and like ways to just kind of like, if they wanted to do a teabag, coffee in a teabag, they could just like do it right away. How do you kind of fight against that?
Yeah, I mean, I don't. So I've got like kind of a few different like philosophies on competition. One, like it's obviously healthy. Like you want to have like some competition. At the same time, I don't really pay attention. Like it's not like there's nothing I can really do about it. But the other thing is like, because it's such a new format, I actually like it when there's new players coming in the space, because they're educating people on the format. So the way I kind of think about business is if you're going to a space with no competitors, that's cool because there's no competitors, but that also sucks because there's no competitors. And therefore what you're doing is like very, very early or new. If you're going into a space with a lot of competitors, that sucks because there's a lot of competitors.
Yeah.
But that's also good because then people know about the type of product that you're bringing to market. Right. So I was reading this Twitter thread. I can't remember what the name of the company was. It was like some water bottle company. Dude, it's a freaking water bottle, right? But like,
talk about competitors.
Exactly. Like they went from like zero to like $100 million in, I think it was like 10 years or something. Not because they had like the coolest water bottle, I don't remember all the details, but it was basically like, it was the way that they like distributed the product. I think they had like one tiny little thing that was like a little bit different. So again, like if you're in like a crowded space, like people are already looking for water bottles. So it's like, you just need to be slightly different, or your distribution has to be a little bit different, or, you know, like whatever. So there's just like different challenges depending on how new your type of product is. So in a way, like I like it when there's new entrants in the market. The other thing is like most of the people I see in the market, like I don't think they understand the customer. Like that's why most businesses fail. Like a lot of coffee companies are started by, and I say this like respectfully and with love, like coffee nerds. And they're always trying to like, if you go to like your local like coffee shop, like the messaging is always like, we're best friends with the farmers and this is the best cup of coffee you'll ever have. That's like basically what everyone says. The thing is like, not everyone lives like in San Francisco, New York. Like people don't always care about that messaging. Like, and so I think because I'm not that type of person, I can more uniquely connect with my customer than people who would traditionally start a coffee company.
Okay. You went more for the outdoor route and that's the kind of customer that you've targeted and you know them well, cause you are them. And so one thing I really liked is on your website, you mentioned that, what Wildland does is you're for people who live a different kind of life, like not a 9-to-5, very like on their own time. How do you, like, what are some things that you've done to attract that kind of customer? What's like the messaging you use or the way, like the, what's the word, the events you attend? Like, how do you get those types of people to become aware of who Wildland is?
Yeah. This is actually probably something I could probably do like a better job of. But like inherently, like a lot of people who are very outdoorsy, like, you know, if you think of like van life, you know, if you think of like you know, like van lifers who are like living on the road.
Yeah.
Right. Or so that's like a very different type of lifestyle, or like backpackers, like it's, you know, some, you know, decent percentage of those people will do like, you know, multi-month through hikes, you know, where they're going from like Canada to Mexico. Like that's obviously like living pretty different. My biggest customer segments are overlanders, which is like kind of a lesser known segment of the outdoor community. So it's like car camping, but like much more intense and like more rugged. If anyone who's listening, just search up like overlanding rig and like you'll see what I mean. It's kind of hard to describe.
Oh, is it like car campers, but who just go really deep off road?
Yeah, like and like you got like a rooftop tent.
Oh, those are cool. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So I think saying car camping is like not, it's not really doing it justice.
Yeah.
So like those people like often live, you know, they're aspirationally wanting to like be off the grid, you know, maybe for like a week or 2 weeks. So like the way it is right now is like, I don't think I necessarily attract those types of people with like my messaging necessarily, but it's just like the people that I'm going after are naturally already doing that.
Yeah. So kind of like the lifestyle that your product allows to have, like it's just attractive for overlanders and similar.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Like I've got like a lot of like RVing customers, a lot of like van life customers. So like my main segments are overlanders, RVers, and like car campers, you know, more like not as intense, right? Just like a regular car camper.
So I imagine you also live a pretty up in the air, like not a 9-to-5 kind of life. What kind of routines do you have throughout your day that kind of stay consistent?
Well, being a solo founder, you're right. I don't work a 9-to-5. I work like a 7-to-7.
Yeah.
That's like the funny joke about being an entrepreneur is like you leave your 9-to-5 to work more. So like routine wise, my ideal, which doesn't always happen, but like
naturally,
I don't know, 70% of the time.
Yeah.
Like I really love to wake up at like 5:30 and just like start working immediately. I've realized this has actually been like a big like self exploration journey over the last 6 months. I've realized that like in the mornings, I'm like the most concentrated, and like a lot of entrepreneurs, like I have pretty bad ADHD. And so, you know, like I'm like pretty focused in like the morning for the first, let's say 3 or 4 hours. And then around like lunchtime, I kind of like get all like kind of weird and like can't really focus. And then at like 7 o'clock, I get like really focused again.
Dude, I relate to that so heavily. Like it's like I made two realizations in the past 2 days. Yesterday, I was like the hours of 2 to 4, I am supposed to be at my job and working. I'm the like not, my brain for some reason just, I've tried doing writing, I've tried doing a whole bunch of different things, like I actually cannot function or work as well. And then the other one was I've tried to be a 5:30 a.m. riser. I did it for a while because I kind of had to. I was working, there was one point where I was working two jobs, so I was going from like 8 to 5 and then 5 to 8 again. I was like on the East Coast and I was working a West Coast job as well. And it made me like, I was forced to. The only time I could go to the gym and do things was if I woke up that early. But like this dude, I think I'm gonna have to push it to 6:30. Like I just don't like, I can't do it. Yeah. So respect on that.
Well, but I mean, like, I think especially like on LinkedIn, right? Or like on Instagram, it's like, you're a fucking bitch if you don't wake up.
100%.
No.
Rise and grind, baby.
Like everyone's like body is different.
Yeah.
And like I work well, like really early in the morning. That doesn't mean that like everyone should do that. Like it's just what works. It like my wife, like getting up at 5:30 is like, get the fuck out of here. Like she's not doing it.
She's like, make sure to be quiet on the way out.
Yeah. but like, dude, she crushes her job. Like it's not, you know, there's, yeah. it, it, there's no like correlation between waking up early and being good at what you do. It's just like, for me, like that works for me. But yeah, I've also been experimenting with meditation. I mean, for the last like a couple of years, actually, I've been like meditating regularly on and off. I've gotten a little bit more serious about it recently. Also things like using white noise in the background, using different like binaural beats to like help me get into like a focus. So I don't know. Are you familiar with Andrew Huberman?
I'm not actually. I'll look him up. I really am a fan of binaural beats. Also having like really intense ADHD. It's like that or white noise. Nothing, having nothing in the background is just a recipe for me to not like just get not focused.
Yeah. So this guy, he's got like a pretty big podcast, and he's a Stanford professor. But basically, like each episode, he breaks down some like neurological thing or some body thing.
Yeah.
And he like goes through like the literature on like whatever that thing is, like legitimate, like peer reviewed studies. And then he talks about like what you can do to, you know, improve like whatever the thing is that he's talking about. And so I got some of these ideas from an episode he did on ADHD. And there was, you know, meditating for 13 minutes daily. There was like a study that showed that people that did it for 8 weeks in a row showed like really big improvements, using the binaural beats before you started to like do like some work. He said that was like, there was like studies that showed that was like really effective. One of the other things that was like really interesting is, so he recommended doing like 2 to 3 90 minute blocks of like really concentrated work a day. Now it doesn't mean like you don't work during other times, but it's just like your like most important things. And I kind of feel like that like took a little pressure off of being productive like all day. You know, it's not even realistic. Also it's like the more concentrated you can be, you actually have to like work less time because you can be more efficient during the time you are concentrated.
Yeah.
I've been like really like kind of going through this because it's been a struggle for me.
No, I totally understand. I love what you said about sometimes, there is a pressure on being productive, especially if you're on, like, I'm a part of this, like just constantly on LinkedIn and Twitter and just seeing how people are saying all their productivity hacks and everything going on. Like, dude, at the end of the day, the experiment I've been having with my podcast, I've been trying so much new stuff just because I talk to many different entrepreneurs about their routines, their habits. And what I've noticed is, whatever works for you, man. Like, just try different stuff until you find something. All of our bodies are different. All of our brains are different. Like, whatever works for you is really the best advice I could give anyone.
And I don't know. I took like I'm on like a LinkedIn break, to be honest.
Oh, I saw that recently. Yeah.
I love LinkedIn, dude. And I have like friends that I've met on LinkedIn, and I've gotten like, I've gotten a lot of value from like legitimate value from LinkedIn, and I hope people have gotten value from me. But like, it just feels like everyone on there is trying to sell you a course. Like, it's fucking annoying. And maybe I could do a better job of like curating like my own feed. So like, I'm sure there's things like I could do about that. But
then that takes time out of your day. Like, you gotta.
Yeah, I'm sure there's just like a lot of like pontificating on LinkedIn. You know, like, oh, here's like my ultimate morning routine. Like, dude, you're just as shitty as the rest of us. Like, we all we're all just trying to figure it out. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, we really are. What kind of, we talked a little bit about the habits you currently have, but have you had to remove any habits from your life to kind of become more successful?
I mean, I would say definitely like my phone is like my phone or social media is like definitely like my life is better when I'm on my phone less or I'm on social media less. Now that's like kind of hard to do. But like that would be like the biggest thing is is if I can avoid getting on my phone for the first like few hours of the day, like it's almost like once I start, it's hard to stop. You know, like people who are like if they're like an alcoholic, you know, that's easier just to not take the first drink.
Yeah.
No, it's the same with me and my phone or social media for sure.
Yeah, dude, I definitely have deleted, had my fair shares of deleting Instagram, Facebook and all that, just because you can go on it on your laptop. Like if you want to have the browser, go ahead. But that's what I've been doing lately. Like not having it on my phone just makes it, the mindlessness is what really gets me. Like whenever I'm in you just get stuck in this zone of like, I could be on this app for a little longer.
Yeah. And it's weird. It's like you stop using, you know, you're like scroll for a few minutes and you come out, right? You see the way I just described it? It's like, it's like, you're like, oh shit. Like I'm still in the real world. Like this thing is not like real. It's all in some kind of, it's like an illusion in some way, actually.
The day I deleted TikTok was I woke up and made the mistake of the first thing I did went on my phone, and I was on TikTok and I looked up and 2.5 hours had passed and I was like, okay, I can't do this. I was like, I don't have the self-control for TikTok. I like gone, done, never touched it again.
Bro, you hit rock bottom, man.
I did.
Dude, there's some like, I know this is not the point of this podcast, but like there's some like really disturbing shit about TikTok. Like not just like the addictability of it, but like I was just listening to a podcast yesterday about and they were talking about TikTok and some of like the things that are going on like legislatively with TikTok in the US, and like I mean, dude, like everything is being given to the Chinese government, like literally everything.
Yeah. Can you hear me? It was a little choppy, but okay. Could you send that podcast over? I'm actually like in the cybersecurity industry and it's this big, it's like a very, very talked about topic, like how it's a legitimate cybersecurity issue. Like it's not, this isn't a joke or like played around. Like it's a legit like data privacy issue. How many people are on this?
I also think what's interesting about it is, and I don't remember where I heard this, but like TikTok in China is like very different. Like it's because like China, like the government controls everything, right? So they want their people to be
the feeds,
like
the feeds there like are curated more like, educationally, and the feeds here are curated to like dance videos and like honestly dumber things.
Right.
Like that's just the Which nature of how me, it goes.
But that makes me think like, is it curating like the dumb shit because that's what people in America want? Or is the Chinese government showing us dumb shit to make us dumb?
Probably both, honestly. Like everyone has a good time seeing dumb shit here and there, but like if the thing is pushing out more and more, then that's probably what you're gonna like more likely click on.
Yeah. And then with TikTok now becoming like a search engine, now like
interesting debate right there, how Google is now being challenged. Like Google and YouTube, which, you know, falls under Google, but they're both being challenged as a search engine. That to me was where I was like, wow, that's insane. Yeah.
Because now they could curate the results.
Yeah, but at the same time, I'm about to start marketing my podcast on TikTok. So overlords, please push me to your algorithm. I need fans.
That's the problem right there.
It's the best marketing tool that has ever existed, dude. That's the problem, is if you want to get out there, like it is truly, there's nothing that compares to TikTok for marketing and advertising. Like it's insane.
I know. I personally, I think TikTok either needs to be sold to a US company or the government should shut it down.
It's interesting how in China they shut down, you're not allowed to access Instagram, Facebook or any like US-based social medias. I remember in college, I was talking to some of my friends from China and they were telling me like, yeah, no, the internet over there is very different than what it is here. Like they were like, we're not allowed to have US-based, like we don't go on websites or social media profiles. So it was like very, like a very interesting conversation to have.
Yeah, I think it's called like the Great Firewall. Like nothing gets in. I mean, I guess unless you have like a VPN and stuff. So yeah. I'm sure that's some people, but like it's it's a very different world over there. And to think that the Chinese government isn't using TikTok in some way to influence America, I think is like very naive. Because I mean, we are kind of like codependent, but I think we're more dependent on China than they are on us. And they have like big aspirations to becoming like the number one superpower in the world. And like, you know, will they start like a physical war with us? Maybe not. But like, will they try to fuck with us with social media? Like, yeah, I think they are. But dude, to your point, it's like this is the best way to get your shit out there.
Dude, they're doing a good job. If they're trying to fuck with us, they're doing a good job.
They are doing a good job.
But I'll be on there soon. So listener, go ahead, check out.
Yeah.
Follow my account. Check out my clips.
Hit that follow button. Thanks.
Yeah. And this bit will for sure be on the account. So
yeah.
yeah. Going back to the habits part. Or actually value, what do you have any like set of values or principles that you believe have really pushed and helped you successful in life? I'm guessing one of them is to live a life not like most people, kind of not under the 9-to-5 umbrella. But yeah, what kind of values and principles do you have?
Well, I think I've always kind of done things my way, and that was kind of part of how I was raised. Like my parents divorced when I was 3, and I mean, I had like good parents, like they loved me, but in a way they were also like kind of absent, not in like in an abusive way. Like they were good parents, but I just like, I had to like figure out like a lot of shit on my own. And so from like a very like early age, like my parents like didn't tell me like necessarily like what to do. Like I would just like figure out like, okay, I want to do this or I want to do that. And like, I would just like go do it. And so that's like really like one of the big things that I think has driven me to like be an entrepreneur is like, I want to do things my way. Mm-hmm. And I want to live the life that I deem appropriate for myself.
Yeah.
But I sold software before I quit. Oh, well, I quit that job like 4.5 months ago. So like for me, outside of like kind of doing things my way, again, that's like the under like the living different thing is like, I'm always putting myself in my customer's shoes. Like, and I did this probably to my detriment sometimes when I like sold software, but it also helps. Like, so, you know, sometimes I would tell someone, I don't think we're like a good fit for you, but because I'm honest and because I'm always looking out for people, like that probably won me, that definitely won me deals too.
Yeah.
And so like, as I, you know, kind of develop Wildland, like always, like I always tell customers when they email me, like, hey, like, I really appreciate your business. Like, I'm nothing without my customers. Like I'm here to serve my customers. And I think there are some people who think that their customers are there to serve them. And you could also apply that to like bosses, right? It's like, are you a servant leadership? Yeah. Or are you using your employees to elevate your status, whether it's, you know, emotionally, financially, whatever. So, yeah, I mean, I'm always like putting myself in my customer's shoes and thinking like what, you know, whether it's like the price point, whether it's the product, whether it's the branding, whatever it is, like I want my customer to like look at Wildland and be like, oh, like this company's for me. And like they in Wildland and or Zach by extension, like cares about me personally.
Yeah, that's interesting. That sounds almost like empathy, like putting yourself in the customer shoes. But at the same time, it's like, it's a different form. It's almost like I don't even know what words I have for this, but what I really like that you do is that it's something that's always been a part of you. Like you said back in the software sales days, it helped you win deals, lose deals, but you were kind of doing it for the other company. Now you're doing it for yourself and you're trying to see how can I make the best possible thing for my customer. And I think that's really cool that you're able to put yourself in their shoes. Yeah. From a branding perspective, I imagine it'd be really hard to not do that.
Yeah. I think a lot of, and there's always ego involved with these things, right? Like I think I know what's best, but at the end of the day, like I, You just got to do what your customer wants. And some, you know, you could take the Apple approach being like, well, the customer doesn't know what they want, but like,
yeah,
you know, that works for a grand total of like one company, right? So there's like millions of companies in the world that, and that works for one.
Yeah. It's probably, and I think you also have to have a really good understanding of your customer's psychology before you can do that. Cause oftentimes you're like, you'll probably be wrong. Maybe you'll get lucky, but my guess is that Apple had such a good understanding of what the customer would want or what they would like to see that they just kind of like provided something that was so far ahead of its time, but they were like, it'll sell.
I think they're also so big that people don't always have choices. But it's fine. So like, I'll give you just like a tangible example of this. So one of the markets I thought would be really good was backpackers. But it turns out like a lot of backpackers are, they optimize for space and weight. They don't optimize for like taste, you know, with like food or coffee, right?
Yeah.
Like they just want like the lightest and the lightest and the smallest thing. And so instead of trying to like force something onto like the backpacking community, I kind of just like not gave up, but like I don't focus on them because I don't think the product like instead of me trying to like convince backpackers that it's like a great product for them, like I've got enough feedback from enough backpackers and I have backpacking customers, but like by and large, you know, yeah, it's just like not the right product for them. There's, you know, for some, yeah, but not for most. I don't, from the feedback I've gotten. But like, I'm also working on some ways right now, where I'm actually going to make it smaller and lighter. And so I think sometimes it's like making changes to a product, like appeal to someone, but I think it's also like knowing when to like maybe abandon like a customer segment based on your current product, because it just doesn't meet those people's needs.
In your experience, when is the moment that you kind of know to jump ship on a certain customer? Like, let's say it's someone like backpackers, they fit the wildlife kind of bucket, and they're someone that you really wanted at first. When would you say, or like, what kind of advice would you give to someone on deciding whether or not they should continue targeting a specific customer?
Well, I don't think you can make that determination in a vacuum, because while at almost at the same time, I was hearing from like enough backpackers that like the space and the weight thing was an issue, I was also hearing from a different segment of customers that the product was perfect. So it's easy to like abandon something when someone else is saying this is perfect.
Yeah.
But, and I, you know, I don't know like how many people said it, but there was like enough people in like a short period of time where I was like, okay, this seems like a representative sample.
Yeah. Like, you're better off doubling down on the one that's working than putting all this time to make it smaller, lighter. That's just, it probably has a lot of cost that goes into that.
Yeah. I've also like learned this through my career is especially when you're small, you know, if you're bigger, this is a little different, because the context is different, but like if you're a small company, regardless of if you're like food or software or whatever, like trying to convince someone that your product is worth it is an absolute waste of time. Like, you know, like if someone's like, oh, this just like doesn't work for me or whatever, let's just like, dude, just move on. Just move on. Cause just, let's just take the US. There's 330 million people in the US. One person says they're not interested. There's, you know, 200 and or 300 million, 20, you know, like there's like some like massive, massive number of people that are like into it. Right. And so I think that in a way is also like having like understanding and like having confidence in your own product that like, if one person says no, or like one retailer says no, like, you can spend the time just like looking for the person who automatically gets it. Like, there's enough people in the world who will automatically understand your value proposition.
Yeah.
That don't waste your time with the people who don't get it. Like, there's just no point.
And are you a backpacker yourself? Do you enjoy backpacking?
Yeah. I would consider myself an overlander.
An overlander.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So let's talk a little bit about that. What kind of got you into the camping in the outdoors and overlanding?
Well, I grew up camping with my mom, like Joshua Tree a lot. And she was more like, I would call like a traditional car camper. You know?
Are you a climber at all?
No, no. Gosh, I just like to go sit.
Yeah.
And then through college, like I didn't like really do any camping, and then I moved to Salt Lake, and for the first like probably 4 or 5 years, I didn't really camp, and I'm kicking myself for that, but whatever. And then like my wife and I, we started like get out more. And then, you know, that's kind of like when the wildland thing started. And then I would consider myself to be like a very junior overlander, like very junior. But I don't even know how I came across. There was a weekend rally for overlanders, and like they just like all met in the desert and like camped out, you know, and like did trail runs or whatever. And I had that like
sounds sick.
Yeah, I had like never really heard of overlanding, but I met someone at like an event or something. And the guy was like, oh yeah, just like come out and like you can like give away some coffee. I was like, all right, cool. So I didn't know anyone. I just like went out there, and it was like sad. It was like the Saturday morning. I was just like walking around the campsite. There's probably like 100 cars there or rigs. And I'm just like handing out my coffee, and people are like, oh dude, this is like really cool. Like this is perfect for the overlanding scene.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay, like let me like research this a little bit more. So like I kept researching it, found some other events, and then kind of realized that like that this kind of camping was like right up my alley. Like,
dude, what a great way to get market research. Like, yeah, just go in person to the event, hand it out, and just say, what do you like about it? What do you not?
Yeah. So now like all the events that I do are overlanding based. I'm actually flying to Virginia in 2 weeks for like a pretty big one.
That's so sick, dude.
Yeah. But like I was at like a really small one this weekend. It was their first year that they had the event. But the one I went to previously, like 3 weeks ago, it's like 10,000 people there, and I sold $4,400 worth of coffee in 3 days.
Dude.
Just to like give you like a sense, and that's like $25 at a time. Just to give you a sense of like people try it and they're like, I want to buy this.
I'm looking at some overlanding rigs right now, and these are intense, man.
Dude, they're sick.
These are so cool. Yeah, that's awesome. Wow, dude, that is a lot of sales in 3 days too. Jesus.
Yeah.
And how many of those do you predict to be like repeat customers? Like how many of those were like, this product is so great, like let me keep getting it. It's perfect for what I'm doing right now.
Well, the cool thing is that all those people already tried the product. So like I give out samples and then they buy it. So I mean, I would expect many of those people to be repeat, because they know it's not like they're going to try it and then not like it. They tried it and then they bought it. So like almost in a way, they're like already kind of a repeat customer, like in a way. So that's actually like one of my biggest challenges with the business is I've like nailed the use case, but like I've also like really nailed the use case. And like, so the use case is outdoors. Some people only get outdoors like, you know, 2-3 times a year.
Very true. Yeah.
So like I have this survey when someone's going to like leave my website, and it basically says like, you know, is there any particular reason why you didn't purchase today? And I've gotten like a few in the last couple of days that said like the season's over, like, you know, except, you know, some version of like, you know, they're not going to be camping for the next like little bit. So I've introduced like whole bean and so like that's one of my bigger challenges right now. Like, how do I get people to like use the product more?
Interesting. Yeah, that is it's really cool that you found that though. That it's all like kind of came together. Like you really nailed. Yeah, that is what's that quote? I feel like it's important to know who you're targeting, but then that also kind of like, fuck, I'm trying to remember a quote. The premise of it is like getting what you want is great, but it also kind of sucks at the same time. Like, you know exactly who you're targeting, but also you know that they only go camping X amount of times per year. And now your next challenge is, okay, who's like, how do I add either another product or another use case? Is kind of like what you're struggling with. Is that correct?
Yeah. Yeah. And it kind of goes back to the, it kind of goes back to like, there's like a price, you know, thing with it too. So yeah, I mean, I'm doing some things right now, like that are, will hopefully like allow me to like reduce my cost to my customer. Cause that's something that I would definitely, you know, I want to be a product for the average person, and I want it to be a product that people can use, like, you know, fairly regularly. Like the overall strategy is to get people like interested in Wildland, like through the use case, because that's like where my differentiator is right now. And then like introduce other products to them that they can use on a more regular basis.
And are you one of these quote unquote coffee nerds? Like, do you find coffee source it out, or how are you getting your coffee made?
So so my supply chain right now, I work with a roaster here in San Diego, and they're phenomenal. And then I work with a co-packer. So like in food terms, that's someone who like manufactures your product for you. Like a lot of small companies don't do their own manufacturing. It's too expensive. So, you know, I let the coffee nerds handle the coffee things, basically.
Yeah, sounds like a good plan.
Yeah, I mean, coffee is like a lot like beer. You know, you can kind of think of Starbucks as like Bud Light. Like, most people don't know this, but Starbucks is like objectively low quality coffee.
No, I love that comparison. That's what Starbucks is like, the Bud Light of coffee. That's perfect.
Oh, they are. Like, they're phenomenal at what they do, but like, Bud Light's not claiming to be the best beer. And like, Starbucks, I don't think ever claimed to be the best coffee. Like I've never seen a commercial where they said they're the best coffee, because they're not. So, you know, it like make like roasting coffee is like very much like an art and a science. And I'm not interested in that art or that science.
Nice. Okay. Yeah, that makes sense. So we talked a little about overlanding and camping. Are there any kind of hobbies or creative outlets you have? Something you like to do for fun?
My business is my creative outlet.
I do remember talking to you about how a majority of your time gets spent like building the business. That's pretty much what you think about what you do and
what I do.
Yeah.
That's what I do. But like also like my business does afford me, like it does afford me to do things that like I enjoy doing as part of my business. Like, you know, I was at this event this weekend, but my friend who comes to a lot of events with me, we left a day early. We went camping for a night. And so like these like events, like they're also fun. Like they're kind of camping events. And, you know, at the end, you know, when the expo or show is over at 5 o'clock, like you make friends and like you go have beers with people and like you're having dinner. And so, yeah, like, you know, a lot of my life, because it's just me in the business. Like, my life, honestly, like, I make a lot of sacrifices. Like, I don't, like, do, like, a lot of, like, fun shit. And I also don't take a salary. So, you know, we're, like, my wife and I are, like, on one income right now. So there's, like, a lot of sacrifices. But, you know, I love doing this. It's, like, my life's mission.
Dude, I love how it's so many people start a company based on, like, the thing that they are the most, like, they love the most and they're most passionate about. And to you, it's your target audience is the thing that you love and is super passionate about. But like coffee per se, like, or let's say it's, you're not the coffee nerd, but you made coffee for wildlife, like for people who like the outdoors, which is what you do. And I find that that's really interesting. Yeah. I love that you managed to pull that off and do that.
Yeah. And I think I mentioned this earlier. I do think that is like one thing that like makes me very different is instead of obsessing, and like the quality of the coffee is honestly phenomenal. Like it's so,
yeah,
fun. But like, I don't like sell people necessarily on that. I'm selling people on the use case and on this is for you. And then I surprise them with the quality of the coffee.
You have like a consumer's perspective instead of an artist's perspective with the coffee.
Yeah. Yeah. Like I'm basically selling to myself versus me being the creator selling to someone else, if that makes sense.
Yeah. I like that. All right, Zach. Well, thank you very much. That's all the questions that I have. I just have a couple closing questions. They're more for fun, and then we can like go on. Questions. But yeah, fun questions. Here we go. What kind of music do you listen to?
Electronic music.
Electronic music. Yeah. All right.
Any I haven't artists? Been to a rave in a while, but I used to frequent raves.
Are you someone who likes Burning Man, Coachella, like the camping kind of festivals?
You know, I've never been to Burning Man. It seems a little like hot and dusty for me, although it also does look kind of fun. But now, like, I'd be more like an EDC person, not EDC? So much like a, okay. like a Coachella.
Yeah. Person. Okay. That makes sense. Yeah. Coachella was very hip hop this year. Not as much EDM anymore.
Yeah. I'm not like really a hip hop person.
Yeah. I went and it was pretty great. I like hip hop. What is your any recent shows or movies that you've been watching that you would recommend?
I saw the new Top Gun. I don't know why, dude. It made me want to cry like the whole time. Like
it was so good.
It was such a good movie. Like so good. Just like the relationships. I don't know. Like my wife and I, like we're not really like movie or TV people. And so I can't even remember the last time I went to a movie theater except for this, like we went like 2 weeks ago. It was so fucking good.
So good. Someone recently told me, I don't know if it was a previous guest, dude, I've heard that answer many times. And every single time I'm like, yeah, that movie was damn good. I don't know if it was a friend we were having the conversation or a recent guest, but we were talking about the new Top Gun and how Tom Cruise, they like finished filming around 2020 or 2021, but he like purposefully was like, no, we're not releasing this movie until you see it in theaters because it has to be like a theater experience. Like that's where you will get the most out of this movie. And so they like held it until this year when theaters kind of reopened and dude, it smashed the box office. Yeah. Like it was so good.
It wouldn't have been as good at home.
I totally agree.
Not even close.
I felt like I was in the cockpit, man. I felt like I was dude, fighting Tom, up there with them.
Tom Cruise, despite being kind of a weirdo with the Scientology thing, is like such a badass.
Yeah, he's also like such a, he just knows how to move in the movie industry. Like you could see he had all throughout the trailers, it was just like the next Mission Impossible. It was like all these different movies he's in. And I was like, damn, Tom Cruise, you legend.
Yeah.
Are there any books you're reading right now?
There's a CPG book I'm reading called Ramping Your Brand. Which is like pretty good, but yeah, I read, honestly, I'm not like a huge reader. I'm more like a podcast person. So I'll answer the podcast. Really like, I mean, like Joe Rogan, like, you know, a lot of people listen to our good friend Joe. One that like is not quite as big, but is still like really good is Lex Fridman. He's more like science, history, technology, but he's really good.
Yeah, I haven't heard an episode, but he gets some nuts guests on his show.
Dude, he gets some like pretty insane people on that show. I've also been listening to some Jordan Peterson, who for a long time, like I didn't like him because I just heard like clips.
Yeah.
Heated. But like what I realized is like the people that like hate him were just taking like, we're taking a lot of stuff like out of context.
Yeah, dude, that's like my worst fear, honestly. But I don't know if it's gonna happen. It's gonna happen.
And then I would recommend Lex Fridman and Jordan Peterson.
Do you prefer podcasts over books? I was having that debate with friends this past weekend.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, like, reading more is something I keep telling myself like I need to do. The reality is like I listen to more podcasts because like I like to listen to them like when I'm driving.
Yeah, I think podcasts, there's like more, it's easier to take in the information because you can do other things while podcasting. Like you can't go to the gym and read at the same time. I mean, if you do, that's a little strange. But you can drive and podcast, like listen to podcasts, you can read, you can go for walks, or sorry, you can go to the gym, you can go for walks, like It's a lot easier to consume, but I'm a books person myself. And finally, where can people find you?
You can find me on LinkedIn, Zach Frantz, Zachfrantz. connect with me there when I get back on LinkedIn in a couple weeks. Just check out my website, wildlandcoffee.co.
Perfect. And I'll throw those in the show notes below. Thanks, Zach. It was a great conversation. It was nice meeting you.
Yeah, you too. Thanks.